Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found on blogtalkradio.com every day, 7 days a week, seven shows, different hosts, of course, and it all begins Monday every week. The Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. They go at 6 o'clock Eastern Time every Monday. Tuesday, Eric is in with the Cross and the Crescent discussion. That's also at 6 o'clock Eastern. I'm here, of course, every Wednesday, normally at 5:30, although today I'm early because of the Thanksgiving holiday. Got stuff to do. Thursdays at 6 o'clock, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, usually around noon, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue, which is a continuation of his Cross and Crescent discussion. Meanwhile, I am here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with my little Aussie. Yeah, I'm now the unofficial Space Force Observation Post to watch launches from Central Florida. I'm not really. That's just my designation, of course. Wish I had been over there for, like I said, for Artemis paddleboarding, but didn't make it. We got some obits this week. Late last Wednesday, we lost actress Nikki Acox to leukemia. She was just 47. She had major TV roles, Cold Case, Dark Blue, and Supernatural, and she had film roles in Jeepers Creepers, The Girl on the Train, and Joyride 2, Dead Ahead. I didn't see Joyride. Well, actually, I did see Joyride, I think, part of it, but don't like to admit it. Then last Thursday, former Iowa Hawkeye track coach Ted Wheeler passed away at age 91. He was also an NCAA champion when he ran at Iowa. He was a U.S. Olympian. And then in addition to that, we also lost another former Hawkeye defensive coordinator, Bill Brashear, who died back on November 4th at age 93, but I didn't cover obits for the last couple of weeks. He was part of Hayden Fry's original staff. He coached up through the 1995 season. His last game was their Sun Bowl victory over Washington, a big win, 38-18. Last Friday, we lost American composer Ned Roram, the age of 99. He won a Pulitzer Prize in 1976 for his composition called Air Music, 10 Etudes for Orchestra. Saturday, we lost actor and martial artist Jason David Frank to suicide at age 49. He was best known as for his portrayal of Tommy Oliver in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. There was some rough go with between he and his wife. Some talking and locking her out of the room. And I'm sorry, nobody should have to go through that with a loved one. They just shouldn't. Sunday, we lost former child actor Mickey Kuhn at age 90. He was most noted for Gone with the Wind, Red River, and Broken Arrow. And we also lost movie producer Gray Fredrickson at age 85. He worked mostly with Francis Ford Coppola. He was on The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, and The Outsiders. Yesterday, we lost former co-owner of KFC and former governor of Kentucky, John Brown, complications of COVID at age 88. He was also, from 1979 to 1998, married to sportscaster and former Miss America, Phyllis George, the late Phyllis George. Let's get to the Laffy. We got some internet Laffy this week. I'll give you one from the Babylon Bee. Top 10 Christmas gifts to give a Biden voter: a pocket translator, which will make his State of the Union speech come alive; an I Did That sticker removing kit, so that they can show their loyalty at the gas pump; flowers for their grave, which is thanks for them continuing to vote after they die; a job on the Burisma Board of Directors. We know of at least one Biden voter who loved this gift. Expensive jewelry, which you can barter for gas. The special edition Matlock DVD set. I'm not sure why. A life-size Zelensky huggable plush doll. Thomas Sowell Books. I wouldn't give that to just anyone. Thomas Sowell's a genius. That's some of the gifts for the Biden voter. So let's get to our stuff. Interesting quick article on an interview that former Attorney General Bill Barr gave to Margaret Hoover on PBS's Firing Line. As you can imagine, most of it, nothing really to see or hear. But one thing he did admit, he said, yes, there is a deep state. He said it does exist, and it's characterized by those who utilize their positions as civil employees to pursue partisan political goals. When he was questioned about his first tenure as Attorney General, remember that back in the 90s under President George H.W. Bush? He said, you know, I wouldn't take what he said to say, well, gee, you know, the people who were saying there's a deep state today are, you know, wrong. There is a deep state. I'm critical of the deep state, and I believe it exists. Because the way I would define it is an increased willingness by more and more government civil servants to pursue political objectives rather than stand up for the values of the institution they're a part of. They are not neutral. They're not politically neutral. But on the other side of the ledger, okay, is that I think there's an exaggeration of its pervasiveness. It's bad. It does pervert government, but I still think the vast majority of civil servants try to do an honest job and try to check their politics at the door. Okay, I'd agree with that. I would. He, of course, went on to criticize President Trump, blah, blah, blah. That's not that broken record has long since sailed. Utah Senator, GOP Senator Mike Lee has proposed an amendment to the Democrats' Respect for Marriage Act that might slow down passage, if not outright kill it. American Briefing covered this. What he's adding, or what he wants to add, is he sent a letter to colleagues addressing it. Basically, he's urging them to change course and oppose cloture on the bill, stating that as it stands, it would violate Americans' basic right to religious freedom and expression of personally held moral convictions. Two sections of the act contain language that would authorize government and individuals to go after American citizens and organizations that do not fall in with the idea that same-sex marriage is legitimate. That's... of the list of things that are important to me, that's way down the list, folks. Way down the list. But, you know, there are, they often do this. They don't consider religious objection. Now, everybody's going to say it's Republicans and Christians that hate it. But you know what? You're not going to find much support for same-sex marriage in the Islamic community. Just saying. So yeah, it's still you know, out there, still going on. Dopey Joe has extended the pause on student loan repayment until courts resolve the legality of the plan. Currently, the moratorium on student loan debt repayment ends on January 1st of 2023. That was when he was planning the full illegal implementation of his illegal plan. Here's part of an article about it from Newsmax. They chimed in. And, you know, I mean, I looked at several articles. I just happened to think theirs was most concise. Basically, Topi Joe says, it isn't fair to ask tens of millions of borrowers eligible for relief to resume their student debt payments while the courts consider the lawsuit. Now it's going to extend another 60 days. And if it's not resolved by June 30th, payments would resume 60 days after that. In other words, it's... Okay, the plan promises $10,000 in federal student debt forgiveness to those with incomes of less than $125,000 or households earning less than $250,000. Pell Grant recipients who typically demonstrate more financial need are eligible for an additional $10,000 in relief. Now, look, more than 26 million people have already applied for it. 16 million have been approved. But the Department of Education stopped processing applications after a federal judge in Texas struck down the plan. Now, the Justice Department, DOJ, I love them, they asked the Supreme Court to examine the issue and reinstate the plan. This isn't too ego-driven. Justice Department says by extending the pause, the administration is giving the court a chance to resolve the case in its current term. Dopey Joe says, I'm completely confident my plan is legal. I'm not sure why he says that. It's clearly not within his purview to do it. I know people cite the HEROES Act, but that was also voted on. It was not just decreed. It was decreed initially, but Congress then voted on it because it was pointed out to President George W. Bush that he didn't have the authority to delay student debt, even for veterans serving in combat, veterans that are active military people that are deployed. He didn't have that authority. And as much as we say, well, you know, these guys should, you know, or men and women who are serving in the military should have this. Yeah, but the president's not the one who decides that. The president does not have free reign appropriation. Just doesn't. So that's going to resolve, obviously, in the next few months. Here's an intriguing tweet from Jameson Carpenter. I don't know who he is. Don't follow him on Twitter or anything. It just somebody else, you know, shared it or something. Asked a very interesting question. It says, how is it that we got COVID numbers reported faster than election ballots? Now, it's a great question, and I'll tell you why. We had seemingly a world data daily, if not quicker. How we were getting accurate numbers from all over the globe, but we can't count ballots inside of a week, at least in some locales. Well, speaking of Twitter, several folks have had their Twitter accounts reinstated. President Trump, of course, but others, conservative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jordan Peterson. Isn't it amazing how propaganda always seems to be the very contradiction to the agenda of the propagandists? I always thought that was interesting. Speaking of elections and ballot counts, a very interesting scenario is playing out in Arizona, specifically with regard to that gubernatorial race between current Democrat Secretary of State Katie Hobbs and her Republican challenger Carrie Lake. The Arizona Attorney General, at this point, will not certify the election. Assistant Attorney General Jennifer Wright says she will not certify it until a full investigation has been conducted into Maricopa County. Arizonans deserve a full report and accounting of the myriad problems that occurred in relation to Maricopa County's administration of the 2022 general election. As the canvas is looming, and these issues relate to Maricopa County's ability to lawfully certify election results, the unit requests a response to the aforementioned issues on or before county submits its official canvas to the Secretary of State, which must occur on or before November 28, 2022. Pointed out, at least 60 locations had problems because of ballot-on-demand printers that printer configuration settings that were non-uniform, meaning they could not be read by tabulation machines. Is this really going anywhere? Probably not. But in the end, it will take office holders standing up for principle to make sure this either A, doesn't keep happening, or B, if and when it does, the cheaters or the incompetent electioneers are either held accountable or at a minimum not rewarded. I mean, look, bravo to those in Arizona as well as other places who stand up when something is clearly amiss. But do I think this is going to change? Do I think Carrie Lake is going to become governor? No, I do not. So Dr. Fauci gave his last address before his upcoming retirement. Actually, to me, it's still a shock that he is still retiring, given that the Democrats still hold most of the cards in Washington, D.C., after what turned out to be basically a red ripple in the midterm elections. So what was his main message? His main message was get tested for COVID before you gather with family for the holidays. Now, as an afterthought on the subject of his possible investigation by Congress, the fraudster said, if there are hearings, I absolutely will cooperate fully and testify before the Congress. Anyone want to guess why he seems so willing? Yeah, you probably guessed it. Probably already knew. Executive privilege. Dollars to donuts. Any investigation will be met with several and agencies in La Dopey Nostra exercising that little ditty to continue their COVID cover-up. Now, a week from tomorrow, December 1st, the U.S. Global Leadership Conference, or Coalition, will quote-unquote celebrate their 2022 honorees for their efforts to push forward the globalist cabal. That's what I say. This year's honorees, President George W. Bush and his First Lady, Laura Bush, former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. and current Administrator for U.S. Agency for International Development, Samantha Power, newly sham reelected Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. In this year's Lifetime Achievement Award designee is outgoing U.S. Senator from Vermont, Patrick Leahy. In other words, I've seen enough to know I want no part of it. The frightening thought is, how did I start getting emails from this self-congratulatory, self-serving group? And when I say self-serving, God, you've got to see these emails. Well, I'll tell you what, it's a lesson in writing your representatives. And yes, from time to time, I reach out to my local state and U.S. elected representatives. My state representative and my U.S. representative happen to be members of the Democratic Party. Hence, like when it's Republican, hence like all good lemmings in government, they pass along the emails and addresses of anyone they believe worthy of being herded into their comps. Yeah, so if you don't want to receive such emails and mailings, keep your mouth shut. No, just kidding. Just kidding, don't. Just remember to look at it as entertainment, though, not saying that anything actually might be newsworthy or informative or constructive. Just saying. Everyone remember Mac Isaac? Of course you do. Mac Isaac is the computer repairman who discovered and blew the whistle when he discovered all the disgusting and incriminating stuff that was found on Hunter Biden's laptop. And he has just released a book called American Injustice, which details some of what he found. More ominous is what the FBI has said and how they've handled it. Isaac notes that when he was handed a subpoena, he was kind of excited. And he told the FBI agents he would cooperate and he would change their names when he eventually wrote his book. And one agent evidently replied to him with the comment that, in their experience, nothing ever happens to people that don't talk about these things. So yeah, basically the FBI agent threatened him. Now, in the days since the discovery and the subsequent Gestapo-like behavior of several in the FBI, Isaac has provided clean copies of the laptop's contents to Congress. More importantly, perhaps, Mac Isaac has also provided details of all his interactions with the FBI, including the aforementioned veiled threat. Now, the implication is that the whole Department of Justice is caught up in this. And Mac Isaac believes we now have people in Congress that won't allow the Bidens or the Democrats or the FBI or the Department of Justice to just sit on this and wash it away. Again, that's just what Mac Isaac thinks. Here's part of an excellent commentary by C. Douglas Golden. It appeared on the website of the Western Journal. I'm not sure if you any of you read the Western, I'm not even sure how I started getting the Western Journal, but I get it email alerts every day. It's about the shooting at the gay nightclub called Club Q in Colorado Springs, and more on point with the inane and insane comments from one of the View co-hosts, Sonny Hostin. This is really good. I'm going to read what I, you know, part of it. Sonny Hostin of The View says she is a practicing Catholic. Whether she is a reading Catholic is a matter of opinion. Yes, Hostin, like most Americans still functioning within the range of normal human response, deplored this weekend's shooting at a gay nightclub in Colorado on Monday's episode of the daytime talk show The View on ABC. From there, predictably, takes diverged wildly. Hostin and the rest of the ladies think the shooter was religiously motivated. Concrete evidence to back that up thus far. Hostin decided to take things a step further, however, saying Jesus Christ would be at the forefront of your annual display of LGBT decadence and licentiousness, otherwise known as the Pride Parade. Pride, of course, being the deadliest of the seven deadly sins. Now, let's back it up a bit, as he says, because the liberals and or faux conservatives on The View had a longer discussion. For instance, even though co-host Whoopi Goldberg admitted we didn't know what the shooter's motive was, she blamed Republican Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado. Words matter, Goldberg said. Words matter. And people like Lauren Boebert, who you know, has been in the forefront of dissing LGBTQ plus people, is now saying her prayers and thoughts go with the families. Well, they don't really need your prayers and thoughts. They need your votes. That's what they need. By the way, the last gay nightclub shooting, high profile, River of the Pulse, right here in Orlando, that was religious. It wasn't a Christian, though. Token Republican co-host Alyssa Farah Griffin lamented that the fact that all 100 senators didn't vote for a bill federalizing same-sex marriage rights. Not mentioning the bill in question had insufficient religious protections attached. And again, it's still not clear that religion had any connection to the shooting. Hostin then jumped in claiming, quote, 300 bills to restrict LGBTQ rights have been introduced this year across the country, adding, if you don't want to go to a gay club because you don't like gay people, don't go to the club. Why do you got to shoot up the club? While non-sociopaths can all agree that those who, quote, don't like gay people, unquote, ought to stay away from gay nightclubs as opposed to shooting them up, Americans might be more divided over Hostin's subsequent claim that Jesus Christ himself, quote, would be the Grand Marshal at the Pride Parade, unquote. I really, really believe that, she said. Let this be an object lesson, Christians, in the fact that meaning well in accordance with the world and doing well in accordance with God's word are two separate and often mutually exclusive things. One understands Hostin's impulse here. There's been a shooting at a gay nightclub, and the archetypal enemies of the gay community are supposed to be Bible-thumping Christians. Like other cultural ambulance chasers, Hostin thinks she's putting two together and lending her support to LGBT individuals by insisting Jesus would be marching in front of their parade. It sounds nice, unless, of course, you've looked at the facts and read the Bible. Let's start with the fact that we don't know the motive for the shooting, which claimed the lives of five people. The suspect, 22-year-old Anderson Lee Aldrich, was reportedly on the rolls of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The church says he ceased being active over a decade ago, and there's no evidence he's still a practicing Mormon. The most we know is that Aldrich has had previous issues with the law, having been investigated for bomb threats by the El Paso County, Colorado Sheriff's Office last year. Then there is the issue of what happens at, quote, pride parades. I'm not going to get into that. So if you want to see NC-17 footage, search it up for yourself. So no matter what Sonny Hostin may think, the Bible is pretty clear on the issue. You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. I could go in and quote all these. I'm not going to. If you haven't read your Bible, read it. It's not for me to read and disseminate. But as the Daily Caller noted, the Catechism of Hostin's own Catholic Church notes that, quote, homosexual acts are intrinsically disordered, unquote, quote, contrary to the natural law, unquote, and quote, do not proceed from a genuine affective and sexual complementarity, unquote. All of which is to say that while Sonny Hostin's soundbite might have sounded like a provocative bit of what the left is fond of calling allyship, it's decidedly unbiblical. Jesus certainly spent time ministering to the sinful. And remember, we are all sinners. But he didn't uphold and support them in their sin. Anyone claiming he did desperately needs a refresher in his book. Spot on. Now, he said it would make my, so the title was that it would make your blood boil. To be honest, it doesn't make my blood boil. Why? Well, because at 60 years old, I've heard most of this bilge. I have heard all the arguments from the quasi-religious left, like things like, Jesus may have been gay himself, or Jesus loves taxes, Jesus hates the wealthy, all that, blah, 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 all hogwash, of course. And it shouldn't surprise any of us. But here's a quick crash course on when you know the person spouting the bilge is doing just that, spouting bilge. It's three simple things. Number one, is what they say factual, i.e., does the Bible actually say what they claim? That's a simple. Number two, is what they say in context, and can it be cited as coming from God or Jesus or a known prophet? In other words, sometimes people will take something, they take a phrase or a sentence out of the Bible and then apply it somewhere else or take it out of context. I mean, even on the issue of, by the way, you know, people will cite Paul often and say, Paul, you know, said, don't, you know, prove gays. Not quite how he said it. What Paul was talking about, and they usually cite Corinthians, a couple passages in Corinthians. What was happening at that time in the church in Corinth is that it was all cliques. You had the women, you had the gays, you had the money counter types, you had those that thought, you know, just the men who thought it should be men only that had any say in the church. So what he was saying was, when he referenced those groups, is that he was saying, don't rely on any one group to disseminate the word of God or to try and interpret the will of God. Number three, this is an easy one, but they do it. Well, they then resort to one of their human heroes, or as one might say, a human, quote, God with a small g. You'll know definitively. Such statements as, well, Bill Gates says climate change, or Warren Buffett says taxes are good because, or a personal favorite of mine, is when they cite the necessity of increased taxes or increased minimum wage with this one, or like a mandatory lockdown or vaccine, when they quote, like, rich people or businesses or high income people won't or will, and then insert applicable phrase. And one of this, I actually went to church with a woman who literally in her life, because her family was generationally wealthy. Good for her. I don't begrudge her that at all. But her reasoning for voting to increase the minimum wage at one point, which by the way, Floridians have now done, voted on multiple times. But her reasoning was this. Without the minimum wage increase, the businessmen just keep all the profits. Now, that may have been life with her robber baron family, but I assure you nothing could be further from the truth. When artificially mandated or artificially created wage or price or other controls are instituted, you can usually count on two things, inflation and layoffs. And notice I didn't say unemployment. Why? Because the way our government types measure that, it never goes up anymore. The only time unemployment goes up is when the White House and Congress are led by the GOP. Other than that, unemployment never goes up. It, for whatever reason, it just doesn't. Here's some interesting commentary from American Liberty News with regard to Vavanka Nancy's husband, that attack on him back on October 28th. They're refusing, San Francisco prosecutors are refusing a public interest law firm's request for the body camera footage of the police response. They're refusing a request for tape of the 9/11 call. Now, there is a significant public interest in this terrible attack on Paul Pelosi. But it's odd that local authorities are withholding basic information. This is according to Judicial Watch's Tom Fitton. Now, allegedly, Paul Pelosi was brutally assaulted by a man with a hammer who planned to kidnap and harm Nancy Pelosi. She happened to be in Washington at the time. Home was also under protective surveillance by Capitol Police, but officers were not monitoring the cameras at the time of the attack. Among the items District Attorney Brooke Jenkins refuses to release are a recording of Paul Pelosi's 9/11 call or 911 call and police officers' body camera footage. In addition to that, Judicial Watch, under California Public Records Act, asked for all records of communications, including emails and text messages, between the San Francisco District Attorney's Office and the San Francisco Police Department concerning the incident. It is also asking for communications with several federal agencies, including the DOJ, the Capitol Police, and the FBI. Well, look, I'm no fan of Nancy Pelosi, but that doesn't mean I think it's right that her husband got attacked in his home. I know there's a lot of speculation about what happened, but, you know, there could be. I'm not saying there are. I'm saying there could be reasons that they're not releasing it yet, but it doesn't sound like it. I ask you, if this happened at the Trump home, you think, number one, you think they'd withhold it? Do you think they'd even be stupid enough to try? But two, do you think the media would be in such protective mode? Of course not. It's real simple. Something is going on. They don't want us to know. Now, under the California public records law, that should be released. So I get that. I get that. And I agree in that regard. But on the whole, not my affair, not my business. Mojave County, Arizona, is also delaying certification of its election results. Now, we already know about Maricopa County, but this comes with a very astute observation by Arizona Republican Committee Chair Kelly Ward. She is a resident of Mojave County. Just what she said, voters in all rural counties in Arizona are being disenfranchised by Maricopa County's incompetence and malfeasance. I'm glad to see that my county voted to delay certification. Now, which brings me to this. Is this actually yet another way for Big Left to push this country into chaos? I mean, we always talk about, you know, destroy the economic system, destroy the health care, destroy this. But think about it. The only thing worse than incompetent and or illegitimate leadership across this country is what? Yeah, no leadership. Or more accurately, leadership in the hands of a nebulous bureaucracy. But if elected officials aren't taking office, I mean, we always hear about, and it happens every presidential cycle, well, the Republican Congress wouldn't sign off on these judicial appointments. The Democrat Congress wouldn't sign off on these judicial appointments. The Republicans wouldn't replace holdovers from the previous administration. The Democrats wouldn't, you know, I mean, we hear that every time. But think about if certain seats did not get filled, if people did not actually take office. The football game scheduled for this Saturday between University of Virginia and Virginia Tech has been canceled. As UVA continues to deal with the deaths of three players and injury to another. This was a result of the shooting that occurred on a bus after returning from a school field trip. As both schools sit with just three wins, it effectively ends their respective seasons, obviously. Now, look, this is obviously hard for the Virginia community, University of Virginia. I get that. It's a foregone conclusion. It's also tough for Virginia Tech, though. I mean, they're losing out on a revenue-generating event, which presumably includes not only broadcast or game, you know, both broadcast revenues and game site revenues. Players also miss out on the experience and the exposure. It's one less opportunity for them to show potential NFL scouts, or nowadays with the transfer portal, you know, to show other schools. Now, it's not dissimilar to schools that lost games during the 2020 football season as a result of the COVID chaos. I know it's not exactly the same, but it's not dissimilar either. My Hawkeyes missed both a unique championship game against Michigan when Michigan had COVID, and then they also lost their appearance in the Music City Bowl. Now, this is after they had won six games in a row after dropping their first two. See, that season saw 10 or more bowl games canceled. Of course, they kept the New Year's Six and the college football playoff bowls, but just saying. And our final downer is the season-ending injury to Tennessee Volunteers quarterback Hendon Hooker during the team's season-crushing loss to South Carolina last Saturday. He appeared to have had his leg twist on a cut, and then he fumbled as he collapsed to the ground. In addition to that game obliterating any college football playoff hopes, and I know they still have a shot to make a New Year's Six Bowl. But it ended Hendon Hooker's great season. I mean, he no doubt would have been in New York City for the presentation of the Heisman. Hell, he may still get invited. His stat line for this season, which concluded obviously last Saturday, 69% plus, 69.6% completion percentage, 3,135 passing yards, 9.5 yards per attempt, 27 touchdowns, just two interceptions, a QB rating of 175.5. He also rushed for 430 yards and five TDs. So, yeah, it's a downer story. I mean, look, I'm not an SEC fan, as most of you know. I'm an Iowa Hawkeye, so I'm a Big Ten fan. But I appreciate good football, and I hate to see it happen to this guy, this kid. It's not the first time. I remember Dennis Dixon for Oregon back in 2007 planted his foot wrong, blew out his knee, and that shot the rest of Oregon's season. It's terrible when it happens. But it does happen. It's part of the game. So I'm going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with some more upbeat stuff. Be back in about 2 minutes. A little Thanksgiving music. And that is, sorry, my phone keeps going off. I thought I silenced it, but that is one of the tabernacle choirs with Over the River and Through the Woods. Now, people always equate both that and Jingle Bells with Christmas. Now, that one doesn't really have any Christmas connotations, and in fact, one of the landing lyrics is on this Thanksgiving Day. You hear that in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. But actually, Jingle Bells, both Jingle Bells and Over the River and Through the Woods were written as Thanksgiving songs. True story. Hey, Brother Warren, New Orleans Wake Up is in the chat room. I wasn't expecting anyone in here today since I'm going at an odd time, as I said, because I had stuff going on. But welcome, brother. Haven't seen you in a while. Haven't been on your show. I'm not even sure I'm getting notifications, so I don't know if you're still putting out notifications from your show. He has a show on Blog Talk Radio as well. So let's get to some positive stuff. Starting, the Hawkeye basketball team is back in the rankings at 25 in the AP poll, number 24 in the coaches poll. Chris Murray really is picking up where his twin brother Keegan left off from last year. He's had games of 29 and 30 points his last two games out. Hawks head to Niceville, Florida this weekend. Wish I'd thought about it earlier. I would have made a weekend out of it. Niceville, Florida, up on the Emerald Coast for the Emerald Coast Classic. They'll face Clemson this Friday. That game, by the way, will get underway just about the time our football game against Nebraska concludes. Then they'll follow that up with either Cal or TCU on Saturday. It's encouraging to see several things. Chris Murray obviously moving to prominence, taking it up where Keegan had left off. Center Felipe Brascia is rebounding very well. And there's a good presence in the middle as big man. He wasn't as forceful last year. He seems a bit more so this year. Tony Perkins and Tyler Ulis both look great at the point. Connor McCaffrey has found a shooting touch of sorts. And Patrick McCaffrey is definitely long in athletics. He's still out of control sometimes, but I still think he's a good player. I'm still not convinced this team will play good defense against the better teams. I'm definitely not sure how deep our bench is. But our freshmen, Josh Dix and Asante Bowen, have looked good. Peyton Sanford is effective as our off-guard shooting guard. I worry about our front-line depth more than anything. But still, this weekend should be a fun weekend for Hawkeye football and basketball fans, so enjoy it. The 2022 election didn't go as well as hoped. But let's look to the 2024 election. There are no GOP Senate seats up in what are considered deep blue states. And there are two times as many Democrats up as Republicans. In addition, three of those are up in deep red states. So look, while we lament how this election went, and while we still see election irregularities, the exposure on the conservative side, if you will, is much less for 2024 Senate races. We also received great news when Vava Vodka Nancy announced that she will step down from any leadership position in the House. Sure, she'll still be sleazing behind the scenes, but her influence is waning. So, by the way, is that of Steny Hoyer, who is equally dangerous. So don't give up hope just yet. And trust me, it's on both sides. I mean, look, I'm not so sure I'm all that thrilled about a House led by Kevin McCarthy. I wouldn't have been thrilled with a Senate led by Mitch McConnell. But, you know, some of the, on both sides, some of the deep state swamp types are getting out. Lots going on in college sports this weekend. We'll start with non-Big Ten football. In the SEC, we have the Egg Bowl, which is Ole Miss and Mississippi State. We have Florida taking on in-state rival, but not a big, or not a SEC team, but Florida State. And then we got Tennessee Vanderbilt. Now, look, Vanderbilt's fighting for bowl eligibility. They have already beaten Florida. Plus, as we now know, Tennessee is without Hendon Hooker. Look, good stuff. There's also the South Carolina-Clemson game, Georgia-Georgia Tech, and in the American Athletic Conference, we have the war on I-4. UCF travels to Tampa to take on South Florida. Let's go on to the Big 12. We have Texas-Baylor. Now, neither team is really in the hunt for the CFP, obviously not for the CFP, but really not even for New Year's Six Bowl. Baylor maybe, but it's going to be a good game. Kansas, Kansas State again is going to be a good game. And Iowa State is going to try and ruin TCU's perfect season and possibly their college football playoff hopes. You see, TCU barely escaped last weekend, getting on with a last-second play, which they say they practice every Thursday, you know, getting their field goal unit on when they have no timeouts. Perfection. Got the field goal to win. So Iowa State tries to take that out this weekend. Okay, I'm only going to talk about this one time, this one day, and this one show episode. World Cup soccer is going on right now in the Middle East. Qatar, to be precise, no matter how you pronounce it, Qatar or Qatar, I don't care. What does make me notice, though, is that the host country has banned all alcohol sales. Yeah, I really want to watch soccer without the availability of alcohol. Okay, back to college football. Out east, we have the ACC. I mentioned Clemson, South Carolina, but there's also Florida, Florida State. And Florida State could be playing for a New Year's Six Bowl. Clemson, obviously. Clemson's still in the playoff hunt, technically speaking. You also got North Carolina and North Carolina State. UNC still has an outside shot at the New Year's Six. Then let's head out west, where the Pac-12 has several teams playing for New Year's Six Bowls. USC having a theoretical chance still at the CFP. USC hosts Notre Dame this weekend for playing in the Pac-12 championship game next weekend. You got UCLA playing Cal to stay on the outside looking in of New Year's Six. 9-2 Oregon versus 8-3 Oregon State, so whoever wins that moves up a bit. Then you have the Apple Cup, which features 9-2 Washington versus 7-4 Washington State. So really what we have is a race for the other spot against USC in the Pac-12 championship game, but it could be meaningful for some of these teams. Oregon is not out, you know, they're out of the CFP, but they're not out of a disappointing season. They're out of a New Year's Six Bowl, which, you know, I don't think is a disappointing season. Washington the same. I mentioned UCF earlier. The real battle is actually between Tulane and Cincinnati in that conference, which is the American Athletic Conference. Cincinnati and Tulane play this weekend. Now, the loser of that game, it doesn't matter who, loses the tiebreaker with UCF. So even though UCF is technically right now in third with Cincinnati and Tulane tied for first, the loser loses will have the same record as UCF, assuming UCF wins, and South Florida's terrible. They lose the tiebreaker, so UCF is pretty much already in the conference championship game. Isn't it weird? The top two teams are playing, but the loser's not even going to get in the championship game. Now, here's why it's interesting. The top-ranked non-Power 5 team gets an auto bid to the New Year's Six Bowls. College Football Playoff Committee, which determines all those matchups, not just the four teams in the CFP, may have a lot of work to do the next couple weekends. I remember last year, Cincinnati was the first non-Power 5 team to make the CFP. Obviously not going to happen this year, but just saying, you know, it's going to still be interesting. Finally, finally we come to the Big Ten. Both slots, i.e. the West and East Division winners, are still technically up for grabs. The winner of Saturday's game in Columbus between Ohio State and Michigan determines the East winner. Now, if the Hawkeyes take care of Nebraska on Black Friday, they are in as the West representative. No worse than co-champion. But again, if they win, they have all the necessary tiebreakers at this point. Now, last year, the Hawkeyes took care of things on Black Friday. They got a gift the next day when Minnesota upset Wisconsin and put the Hawks in. They gave the following week against Michigan, sucked in Indianapolis. It still sucked, but at least they made it. But here are some interesting facts. The last team from the West to make consecutive appearances was Wisconsin in 2016 and 17. Now, the East side has been more recent. OSU was they got into Indy four seasons in a row from 2017 to 2020. Here's a real interesting fact. If the Hawkeyes win, and if Michigan should pull off the upset in Columbus, I don't think they will, but if they do, next week would be the first time in Big Ten championship game history that the same two teams have appeared and played in consecutive seasons. Granted, we've only had the Big Ten championship game since, I think, 2010 or 11. But this would be the first time that you've seen the same two teams playing in consecutive seasons. So let's go with my Big Ten picks this weekend. Still taking Ohio State to beat Michigan. Michigan's got some guys beat up. So does Ohio State. But I just think Ohio State has more firepower. Simple as that. Maryland at home over Rutgers. Illinois over Northwestern and Evanston, which gives the Illini a nice 8-win season. I think they're a little disappointed after losing some consecutive games there. They had the West, but they've lost. Had some losses recently, so that kills them. I'll go with Wisconsin over Minnesota in Madison. That leaves both of them with 7-5 records. Disappointing. Both picks as front runners, basically, for the West. I got Purdue over Indiana, which allows Purdue at least a co-championship in the West division. Kind of if the Hawkeyes lose, they're actually in. That's kind of scary. Penn State is going to curb stomp Michigan State. Leaves the Spartans home for the holidays at 5-7. And you'll start to hear the first rumblings about Mel Tucker's $9.5 million annual contract. Finally, in Iowa City, I go with the Hawks for the West Division slot in Indy. I'm not sure we either cover the 10.5 point spread, nor do we see the two teams cracking the over of 38.5. But we've had troubles with Nebraska in recent years. I just think this year we're pretty focused. Now, will it be a blowout? Probably not. But I think we'll control the game for the most part. I sure hope so. Be very disappointing. So we're going to take one more quick break and then come back and get all thankful. Tell you what we should be thankful for. Be right back. And we're back with Hank Jones, Poly Sports. Don't have any phone listeners today, and Brother Warren has left the chat room, so don't have to worry. I wasn't going to take any phone calls unless it was people that wanted to give a quick thanks for something. So in that vein, I want to give my own. You know, at this time of year, it's a busy travel time. This is the busiest travel day of the year, supposedly, and the weekend is busy, obviously. So if you're driving somewhere, be careful. If you're flying, be patient. I know it's not easy. It's also a busy shopping time. I know we often get excited to go out on Good Friday, but you got to temper that. You got to be patient again. You're going to run into crowds. That's just the nature of the beast. It seems harder every year, but you know there's also an excitement about it. A lot of people have already put up Christmas decorations, but you really start seeing it this week. This is when you'll really start seeing buying their trees. You know, we're still dealing with crazy election stuff. It's terrible in a lot of ways, but it is what it is. The economy is still sluggish. The cost of Thanksgiving dinner is up yet again from last year. Although, again, if you look, you can find the deals out there. in Florida, Winn-Dixie, and they're not just Winn-Dixie's in Southeast. Winn-Dixie's had a sale. Spend $30 and you can get a turkey for 49 cents a pound. Now it ain't hard to spend $30 at a grocery store these days. So it's not exactly an unreal or an unrealistic purchase. But yeah, the cost of Thanksgiving dinner is up basically from last year. Still, I'm grateful for the country we live in, where we can speak out, where we can grumble about government, we can grumble about businesses, we can grumble about our sports teams. People will always say, for now. Well, guess what? For now is our last guarantee. For the moment, now is the last guarantee you have. You don't have a guarantee of 5 minutes from now. You don't have a guarantee 5 seconds from now. So when we hear people say, oh, but we can do it for now, I'll be glad. You can still do it. Grateful for the Hawkeyes, of course. I just love being a fan. I'm grateful for college football in general. There's nothing more exciting to me. I know people have said, well, the Final Four, the March Madness is more exciting than bowl season. In a sense, yeah, because all the games are concentrated, but there's bowl season to me is just, there's just something about it. It's different when you're still in college, obviously. But I used to love that, knowing that this starts bowl season. Grateful for my friends who keep me as friends in spite of me. I'm grateful for my little mini Austie. She keeps me relatively young because she's so active, and so as a consequence, I have to be active. Just an adorable little dog. She's 30 pounds almost, but just adorable, just as smart as a whip, but just a loving dog. I'm grateful for my family who keeps me as family, though I deserve none of it. Love my wife. Grateful for my wife, my daughter, my sisters, for my brother, my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, my brothers-in-law, my nieces and nephews, just my daughter and son-in-law I mentioned before. I don't deserve any of it. And that's why I'm grateful. But I don't mean to be melancholy about it. I'm grateful for it. Like I said, we live in the greatest country in the world. I have the best friends and the best family. And you know what? Certainly we've all had setbacks, but you know what? Still great. Relish it. Relish time with family this weekend. I know you worry, he's a Gator fan or she's a liberal. So what? Deal with it. It's the weekend. It's a long weekend. Have fun with it. Now, you can get into discussions about sports or politics or religion without it being so terrible. So enjoy this weekend. Have fun this weekend. Be grateful this weekend. Guaranteed, as I said, we're only guaranteed now, up till now. We're not guaranteed anything after, so cherish it. Okay, folks, have a great weekend. Have a great holiday. Maybe next week, for those who are listening to this later, maybe next week people can call in and tell me how they did their turkey this weekend. I've got one that I cut up and I'm smoking it. In pieces, not as a whole, just smoking the pieces separately. Just easier that way for me. And we're not doing a lot more than that, though. I'm going to actually be paddling tomorrow morning because there's a group that wanted to go out on a tour, so I am taking them out. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Have a great holiday. Have a great Thanksgiving. God bless you all. God bless this country. And we will talk next week. I'll send you out again with a good Thanksgiving music. It's a really good version of it. So here we go, Over the River and Through the Woods. Happy Thanksgiving, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.